I just sort of felt as if perhaps it was cut open, and then I see a sort of a representation of just being opened up very cleanly and something taken out and then just put right back together, and I did have sort of a sensation of lying on a table, but I can't see it too well, but it looks like, I just think that it's a hospital, AC, what does it look like it might be? Po, Dr. Clammer asks what's happening? Well, I just sort of see whiteness. I get sort of the impression of being carried somewhere else, like on a stretcher. Long pause. Well, I sort of saw that hand, that metallic hand that I saw last week, only that is not really what it looks like. For a moment, I sort of thought I had a glimpse of it, but I didn't. Couldn't really see it. I saw it as at first a sort of mechanical hand of the type that you see in, robot hands and for handling nuclear materials and that sort of thing. But I don't think that's it. Exactly. The one thing that's, the sensation that I think is right about that first hand is the fact that there is something that's very, very brilliant, very polished. A metallic surface, and I had the impression of light reflecting off it, and then L did have the impression of a very bright light shining on me. But I don't think it was from. Well, at least at one point, it is more, dot, to the side. I'm not sure if there is a light shining on me from that table. Long pause. I see that same thing I saw before. Very, dot, round, the thing, a large, illuminated, round spherical thing, the UFO. I'm not quite as much aware of the divisions, and, for some reason, it's not putting down as much light. Pause. It's not putting out as much light, but I don't know why, but when I see it, I just sort of move and glide towards it and just dissolve into it. Pause. I'm trying to figure out if it's supported from the ground or if it's just in the air. I have the impression of vertical supports from the ground, and there are times when it seems quite gigantic. Long pause. Above me, I just have the feeling of some sort of mechanical apparatus. But I can't see anything very clearly. It's just an impression. I do see some abstract images that I just couldn't describe. Long pause. I feel like, if I approach it in the right way, it can have a great calming effect, but I don't really know how. Because it can be either very calming or very, sort of an unpleasant thing. It can have, sometimes I feel one like there is a great calming effect. Pause. Dot. I just find myself sort of relaxing and letting it alone. AC, at the count of three, you are going to find it much, much easier to see. 1, 2, 3. Po, well, I had seen something that was sort of, kind of a wall arrangement as if it was decorated with some kind of painting and there was something on that and there was a kind of an eye motif on that, but it was not just a shape, just the almond shape. But when you counted to three, it turned to a large eye that was staring at me. The eye is either disembodied or else there is a person's face is blackened so that just the eye is apparent. It's just very intense and piercing. AC. How does it make you feel? Po. At first, it wasn't very pleasant. I saw it more clearly at first. But I don't see it so much now. Dr. Clammer asks Philip how old he is as this is happening. Po. I can't see myself but there, number, 8 pops into my mind. Pause, I can see a 7 too. She asks what he is wearing. Po, well, I see sort of a plaid from a shirt and maybe short, pants. AC, do you remember wearing a jacket? Po, well, I didn't, but I can imagine myself in a coat. Pause, I guess it's a leather jacket. Long pause. AC. You said that you could imagine yourself in that coat. Which coat? Can you tell me a little bit more about the jacket? Po. It looks sort of like a brown leather jacket, a short waist length jacket. It's kind of, beat up a little bit. AC. Do you like that jacket? Po. I don't know. I didn't even know I had a jacket like that. The session continued, but shifted its focus to the later Pittsburgh incident, which we will consider in a moment. Meanwhile, so many fascinating parallels between Phillips and Virginia Horton's accounts had surfaced that they bear immediate consideration. I asked Philip afterwards if the hand that he remembered, the one with the metallic fingers, was a different image from their robot arm which he apparently associated with the cutting of his leg, and he answered affirmatively. They weren't versions of each other? I asked. No, it's as if they both are images. They come into my mind, they are suggesting some other image, like the hand is more or less like a glove from a piece of medieval armor, only much more shiny. Medieval armor, of course, is jointed, I continued. Was this jointed? Right. In other words, you have the feeling that each of the separate fingers had separate little sections, so there were two distinct images, a jointed metal hand, and a less articulated robot-like arm which seems to have done the actual cutting. His description under hypnosis was of a sort of mechanical hand of the type that you see in robot hands and for handling nuclear materials and that sort of thing. Virginia Horton had described the way she was cut in, this way, it's as though it's done remotely. Have you seen those things where you put your hands in when they handle radioactive material? Your hands go in and you handle instruments and then, in a remote location, something happens. It's like that. I don't think they have any direct contact with me physically. Again, two witnesses who had never met or spoken to each other use the same metaphor to describe a particular aspect of their UFO experiences. And apart from Philip's recollection of a metallic hand and Virginia's sense of disembodied communication, neither recalled any UFO occupants. Virginia described the moment of the incision this way, they said, we'll just stop it from bleeding. So whatever they do it, you know, like this, and then it just closes itself and stops bleeding. Earlier, she said they told her that they needed a little bitty piece of her for understanding. Philip put it this way, I just sort of felt as if perhaps it was cut open. And then I see a sort of representation of just being opened up very cleanly and something taken out, and then just put right back together. The rooms in which the operations took place are also described similarly. Virginia said, there are lots of things to catch my eyes, things that shine, they're sparkly, like crystals or like instrumentation, but they're so pretty that they don't distinguish in my eyes between whether they are things or art. Philip said that he had seen something, kind of a wall arrangement, as if it was decorated with some kind of painting and there was something on that and there was kind of an eye motif on that. I have listened to many hypnotic sessions and read many transcripts. The only two people who ever mentioned the words art and painting were, again, Virginia and Philip. One could almost believe that the ship or ships in use in 1950, the physical operation itself, removing a section of flesh, and the methods of the UFO occupants were identical, as were the ages of the abductees and the time of their abductions. So far, the concordances were amazing. Even the way I had heard of their cases was identical, as a result of the NBC broadcast. Over the years, I have tried to train myself to discount the calm tone of voice a witness will often use to make an odd or illogical statement seem the most natural thing in the world. If the case involves a time lapse, and therefore a degree of memory control, witnesses will often describe their strange behavior as eminently logical. Philip awoke in his Pittsburgh bedroom paralyzed and sensing a presence in the room. So terrified had he been, he said, that he got up, got dressed, and went outside. So natural was the way he recounted it that it took me a while to realize that his behavior was, on the face of it, most unusual. I tried to think what I would have done had I been in his place. First, I would have turned all the lights on, perhaps put on the radio or TV, and if I had been really terrified, I would have gone to awaken someone else in the house just to talk the fear out of my system. The very last thing I would have done would have been to go for a walk at 3 a.m. outside in the dark, where the presence might be lurking. Prior to this hypnotic regression, I asked Philip if he remembered where he walked to that night. Had there been an all-night delicatessen nearby or a bar or some place where he could rub elbows with other humans? I offer the following transcript as illustration of the way external control of the subject's memory can not only block out actual events, but also somehow fill in with explanations which ultimately make no sense. One can feel Philip's uncertainty growing as he talks about the experience. Poe, I probably just walked around the block, that's all. The immediate vicinity was a residential area, and if you walked about 4 or 5 blocks, you came to a commercial area. I really don't remember where I walked. B.H., it is, when you think about it, unusual that you would, in being frightened, that you would actually get up and go out middle dot side. Poe, laughs, well, that's unusual but, you know, this room, this was quite a small room, and it would tend to get rather claustrophobic at times, and if something like that happened in this little room, you know, all of a sudden, well, I don't know, I was not in the habit of getting out and walking around blocks at night certainly, but, it just seemed like the thing to do at the time. B.H., well, I just think that, the only reason to ask questions about it is that it was an event you had singled out as being unusual to you at the time. Poe, it was. B.H., and in thinking it over, it seemed unusual that, well in my situation, if I were frightened, I would turn on the lights, and I wouldn't think of going outside, where, theoretically, the thing is that is frightening me. Whatever it may be. Poe, that's true unless I associated the thing with their, dot, room, but it's strange because I just don't know. I think it was just that I figured that I needed the cool air. Probably I was awakened at that point and couldn't just lie back down and go to sleep right away, so that was something to do. B.H., and especially in a very small room. Poe, yeah? Well, I had never thought of it, to be honest. I had certainly never thought of that, but I, who knows? I, don't. B.H., what we've got to do is try to run down all the possibilities. Poe, I never thought of that. That's interesting, chuckles, to be honest with you. Now that you mention it, I never did think about that, of course. Well, I don't know. I certainly don't have any recollection of anything happening. B.H., I'm not necessarily convinced about any one particular incident here. The only reason I even ask these questions is, I was curious what the physical layout was to see if it would have been even remotely a natural thing for you to get up and run down the street to get coffee. Poe, we 1L. Now. I wouldn't, I certainly don't think I've any recollection of doing that. I probably would I have a recollection of, or it seems to me, I must have gone, oh, let me see. If you were to go more or less in the direction of the back of the house, there was a road that sloped up this same hillside and, up on top of that area, there are a number of, 3 or 4 large mansions, with fairly large grounds that are unoccupied or were unoccupied at the time. One was the old Hines mansion. B.H., but you probably walked the other direction. You wouldn't have gone up the hill. Poe, no, I don't think I would have gone up there. That was the route I would pick in walking to school, but I don't think I would have then. B.H., not at night. Poe, no, I don't think I would have done that in the middle of the night. Philip's rationalizations for his unusual behavior were coming slowly unraveled. All of the reasons for his 3 a.m. stroll, which he delivered in such a natural tone of voice, began to seem absurd to both of us. His final recollection was of the hill behind his house, where several deserted mansions sat on rambling grounds, a memory which I realized was potentially significant. If Philip, like Howard Rich, had been visited in his bedroom by some kind of controlling force and then led up the hill to the grounds of the deserted Hines mansion, an abduction could have been physically carried out with little chance of interruption. The latter part of Philip's second hypnotic session was taken up with the Pittsburgh incident. AC, let yourself relax. At the count of 3, you are going to find yourself back in college. You are feeling very relaxed. 1, 2, 3. Poe, long pause, I can see that room a little bit more clearly. AC, would you please describe it? Poe, it's small and I see a face in the window. The bed was on the left. There was a sloping wall because of the roof, and there was a projection out toward where the window was. And it was painted a different sort of dull yellow there for some reason, and the rest were painted white. and there were old, fashioned bookcases with glass covers that lift up, high on either side of the window against the wall. And I was just very curious about that presence at the window. But I can't exactly put myself back into that, I can't exactly experience that event, though. AC, let yourself drift deeper and deeper. Your mind and the images will become much more available to you than they ever have been before. Poe, very long pause, I see it as I saw it then, I do think that I must have sensed that light, like I just sensed now, but at the time, I was only aware of a sort of a silhouette and just now I really did become more aware of a figure. It did change. As I look at it, it really sort of eludes my efforts to look at it. But I did have the impression that this head was kind of embryo-like, shaped. These eyes were really sort of tucked into the forehead. A big forehead, but the eyes are metallic. Whispers inaudibly. Something's strange, but anyhow I just associate this with the window and this light that's coming through. But it's not a very big window, two small windows. Actually. Green window shades. The old-fashioned kind. Long pause. But I do. I sort of have the impression of someone saying that it's okay now, pause. I don't know why, originally, it was dark in the room, but I do have an impression of light, long pause. I think that it is possible for me to go much deeper. Despite his request and Dr. Klamer's effort to induce a deeper trance, nothing resulted. In a few moments. After more periods of silence, we ended the session and Philip was brought out of the hypnotic state. Immediately afterwards, I brought up the matter of the big eye that he had seen. I asked about its size, was it like a normal eye or was it larger? Poe, well, I had the impression at one point that it was quite huge. BH, how large? Poe, well, that was maybe the initial impression, a couple of feet. I don't know. If it was maybe 10 feet up in the air, it, apostrophe, was maybe larger than that. I don't know. BH, yes. But you had a feeling it was above you? In other words, rather than on a vertical plane, that it was suspended some, how? Poe, yes. BH, and it had like a pupil type of thing? We are assuming it was not a real eye. Poe, it did, but it would sort of. You know, keep changing. I never have just a stationary image, but I get a sort of initial quick impression and then it starts degrading into L1 other kinds of things. BH, do you have the feeling that it was moving or that it was stationary? Poe, well, it's hard to answer what you say because neither in a sense. You know, you have the general impression of being there and then I see, you know. Various different kinds of, I probably saw more than one eye at one particular time and then the pupils sort of. The pupils started changing and being different, a large, evidently moving and changing eye-like device was suspended over him. Charlie Hickson, abducted in Pascagoula, Mississippi, in 1973, reported that there had been a large machine hanging overhead. It looked like an eye. Like a big eye. It had some kind of an attachment to it. It moved. It looked like a big eye. And it went all over my body. Up and down. Betty Andreessen, abducted in South Ashburnham, Massachusetts, in January, 1967 described a very similar piece of equipment suspended over her, and she later made a drawing of it. This object seems different from that which Stephen Kilburn described, though its location seems the same. As I have pointed out many times, the UFO abduction phenomenon breaks down not into just one absolute pattern, but rather into several closely related, parallel patterns. Hickson, Andreessen, and Philip Osborne and faced a similar eye-like apparatus, though, in other respects, Philip's case diverges from theirs. This complexity is more or less what one might expect if the phenomenon is as advanced as it seems to be. And as relatively unfathomable. Imagine two medieval serfs comparing notes after having been rushed through differing batteries of tests in a modern hospital. I offer the example not so much as an explanation of anything, but as a means of keeping our ideological doors slightly ajar. On June 7, 1979, Philip Osborne had his third appointment with Dr. Claymore and he concentrated on the Pittsburgh incident. I was not present for this hypnotic session, having already moved to my Wellfleet studio for the summer, but Ted Blocher attended. This time, as with each of his sessions, a few more details emerged, each of which was consistent with what we already knew. There were many periods of silence, some of which lasted 5 minutes or so. The transcript which Full One owes has been edited to eliminate false starts and irrelevant material. Poe, I can imagine myself lying in the bed, but, I don't know. If I tried, maybe I could just allow myself to recreate it. AC, why don't you take just a few minutes now to recreate it if you wish? Or do anything else that you want to. Poe, after a pause of nearly 5 minutes, well, I can just sense that I would like to be able to yell out, but I can't, and I see a very terrified expression on my face. Hut, that's just imagined, of course. AC, it might not be imagined, it might be real. Poe, after a pause of 2 minutes, and I can see myself finally being able to say, help, 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 and I'm being, sweating. Long pause. AC, what's happening in your body, Philip? Poe, I'm just sort of drifting into another sort of level of consciousness. AC, just let yourself drift into that other level of consciousness now. The energy is flowing freely and easily within your body and mind. After 5 minutes, Philip begins breathing more rapidly and shows signs of moderate distress. This lasts for about a minute and then subsides. Lai sighs deeply several times. There follows another silence of 10 minutes, broken several times by deep sighs. Poe, I can sort of recreate things in my mind up to a certain point, but I can't seem to go any further than that. AC, that's all right. You don't have to go any further. You can do it another time, or not at all. It's really up to you. Poe, I could just feel myself lying in the bed and, I have that sensation of my jaw locking, and so I would try to move it, but I couldn't and, once the whole thing was over with, I could see myself leaving, going down the stairs and leaving. And I think, I'm pretty sure I left by the front door, which I don't usually do, I think I left by the front door, which is a big, metal, ornamental iron door, with glass, and I think, I really wasn't sure, first, where I went. But the only thing that really comes to mind is going, oh, to the, a short distance, dot, away, there's a roadway that goes up a hill, just a short residential drive. And I remember the stone wall, where that roadway goes up, and I see myself going to the Hines mansion. This is directly to the top. That's the first turn, off to the left from that roadway, and it is perched up on top of the hill, and it is, nobody lives there. And I just can't, I'm not sure, but I just sort of sense a commotion going on, not in the house, but outside of the house. I don't know, I just can't get a clear image of what, except that I seem to be very curious. I don't seem to be particularly tense anymore. Very little else emerged. After a long period of silence, Drive Claymore brought Philip out of the trance, but the story had been advanced further than before. Philip later told Ted that the commotion he saw as he walked up the driveway to the Hines mansion was occurring at the back of the house. It seemed to him to involve a number of figures, but he could not make out any details. One of the more puzzling recollections from Philip's previous hypnotic session was his description of a figure in the window of his third floor room. The basic problem was that the window was behind his head and he was, in his paralyzed state, unable to turn around. How had he managed to see this strange personage? His description of it was quite precise, as if he had observed it close up. I questioned him about it after he had been brought out of the trance. B.H., you say this face had this fetus-like look? Poe, yes. First of all, I saw it from more or less of a profile, and it was, I guess the face would have been facing the right. Yes, either it was sort of turned away or somehow or other the features of the face were not apparent to me, but the initial impression was this large cranium. You know, sort of like an embryo. And also, I did have the impression of blood vessels or something. Like some sort of, well, I guess blood vessels or something or other. Some sort of a texture. And then as the head revolved around, you know, you had the impression of this great forehead with these large eyes. Well, no. Not exactly like that drawing that Stephen did. The eyes were somewhat semi-1R in proportion, but it was more. BH, it was rounder, perhaps? Po, well, the head in Stephen's drawing was more or less egg-shaped without so much the sensation of a forehead, but I had more or less a feeling of a forehead, and his eyes were more or less contained under there. The eyes, well, I had the impression of their being solid, but then I think that this feeling of the metallic, that it was almost like a metallic plate, or something. Nobody sees that, do they? BH, no. And that's even though you had the feeling of blood vessels? Po, yes. BH, because that seems like kind of a funny mix. Po, well, it is a funny mix. Yes. No question about it. I did not get the impression of a grayish skin. If anything, light, but, if anything, maybe with some sort of a fleshy or a pink cast, not a gray or a gray, gray. He began to describe his feelings at the time. Po, at a certain point, there is a transition that seems to take place. Sometimes, it has a much more calming effect. BH, yes, I suspect that that is something that actually happens in the experience. That there is the frightening aspect and then there is a tranquilizing aspect. Po, well, I suspect that that is really what was going through my mind. On this judgmental level, I was saying, I wonder if I have been tranquilized or something. Now that was almost as if I was experiencing that suddenly I felt much more calm. And then usually I drift from that state, I drift away from the thing altogether, and, you know, I start thinking about something else, and it just becomes unimportant. BH, you said that it was as if you were getting a sense of being told everything is going to be all right, or something like that. Po, oh, yes. I heard that everything will be all right. The conversation ended with Philip's characteristically careful disclaimer. I, Po, I was just trying this time to tell you whatever just sort of popped into my mind. It was very much just kind of a collage of impressions. There was not any kind of sequential thing, there was not any involvement. Really, or the feeling that I was reliving anything, rather, that I was acting as an observer. This statement has, I believe, a specific importance, which I will come to in a moment. Meanwhile, the first thing to be considered is the figure as Philip described it. He was careful to distinguish the shape of his head from a shape he had seen on the NBC documentary, drawn from Stephen Kilburn's recollection. The large cranium with the eyes tucked underneath recalled drawings of humanoids reported in the Travis Walton and Sergeant Moody cases. The main similarity to the face in Stephen's drawing, he felt, lay in the proportionate size of the eyes and the size of the head. His description of metallic eyes on apparently semi-transparent skin which showed the blood vessels underneath, was indeed, as he said, a funny mix and one that I had never precisely heard of before. Now we come to the crucial question, how did he see all this while lying paralyzed in bed, facing away from the window? The answer is clear from a close reading of the transcripts. As Dr. Chamar asks him to describe the little third floor room, he says, I see a face in the window, I was just very curious about that, presence at the window. As the episode comes to light, he continues. At the time, I was only aware of a sort of silhouette, and just now, I really did become more aware of a figure, it did change. Emphasis mine, I believe that Philip, in his scrupulous manner, is trying to differentiate between a vague image, a sort of silhouette, that he recalls in connection with the window and the fuller image of a humanoid, which seems to be tied up with later events. This more complete figure, which had a specific fleshy or pink cast, not a gray or gray-gray skin, apparently was seen close up and in decent light, So one can assume that it was encountered after the incident in the bedroom, and in another place. In fact, when I asked Philip if this more detailed figure was inside the window glass or outside, he answered this way: it was neither. It was just associated with the glass, with this window. I was not seeing this from the viewpoint that I was in at the time. I was seeing it from the viewpoint of the here and now, it standing there and looking at me.